You know, I was looking at the, you know, here are the Tennessee Titans. They've got the open week before they get down to the nitty-gritty with six straight games. And I'm looking at the fun and festivities that we're going to experience as far as the AFC South coming up on Sunday. And you know, we could literally have all four teams a game out of first place or in first place, depending on how things play out. Houston's at Baltimore. And then you've got the Jacksonville matchup. They're on the road taking on Indianapolis at Indy. And so it's going to be really intriguing to see after the dust settles what the AFC South looks like going into next weekend.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because it wasn't long ago. I was like, oh, there it is. The separation is happening. And, you know, Houston and probably Houston and Indy are going to go off over here, and Jacksonville and Tennessee will battle it out for the basement, and that'll be that. But, you know, all it takes, the NFL, you know, something goes sideways for a week and quarterback gets hurt, you know, backup quarterback comes in and all of a sudden the team's playing better, shocking win. I mean, it's funny how it always seems to come back to what we initially thought, which is, you know, probably everybody right around 9-7 and somebody will be 10-6 and win the division.
Well, that's like the Miami Dolphins, you know, after their 0-7 start, you know, here they are now with seven games to go. They're three games out of a playoff spot.
They're blowing it, man.
They're blowing it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing because everybody just assumed it was battling it out for Tua Tagovailoa, and now you add Joe Burrow into the mix. So, you know, who knows what the flavor of the month will be coming up next April.
Well, that's true, but if you're number one, then you get your choice. So whoever it is, you know, you don't have to worry about what anybody else thinks. But, yeah, I mean, it's all of a sudden, you know, it looked like the Dolphins were clearly the worst team, and now it looks like that's probably the Bengals. And like you said, I mean, think about how our perceptions of the different quarterbacks have changed. I mean, not even necessarily this draft class. You know, Trevor Lawrence, look how, you know, he's kind of struggled this year. And obviously Burrow's kind of come out of nowhere, you know, to become this possible number one pick. So, and usually, even after the season, you have Senior Bowl and then combine all that stuff, usually you'll see major movement off that too, and things could, you know, flip back around, or, you know, whoever, like a Jacob Eason, who probably has as big an arm as anyone, you know, could be a guy who moves up the boards, just as a random example.
In your time covering the Tennessee Titans, especially with, you know, with what we have with Mike Vrabel and his staff, and looking at it from an offensive standpoint, what do you think the reason is behind, especially the last couple of years, where the first half is like the reluctance to, you know, allow Derrick Henry to be Derrick Henry? I go back to the game against Tampa Bay, a team that was the number one rush defense in the NFL, and here they are trying to run the ball up the middle. I was really surprised, although everything dictated to give the ball to Derrick Henry as many times as possible on Sunday against Kansas City, knowing that there were only three teams worse at run defense in the NFL, I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised that they go, hey, why don't we see what Derrick Henry can do going up against the 29th, you know, best defense or worst defense, whichever you want to play it out, in the NFL, and that's what they did, and look at the game he had.
Yeah, well, and I think, 23 carries, and they had like 50 plays. So, I mean, that's actually, that is pretty impressive in terms of commitment to running him, you know, when you think about trailing most of the game. Now, never, for the most part, not way behind, but still trailing most of the game. A lot of teams are just going to kind of default to, you know, throwing it more. And, look, I mean, there was a lot of talk after the Carolina game. You know, it was situational, and this unfolded that way and all that. But it's funny how after that game, Deion Lewis doesn't get a touch the next week, and Derrick Henry gets every possible touch. Yeah, and it's funny how that worked out for them, too.
Is it one of those things, too, when we got this amount of money invested in Deion Lewis, so we got to use him. He can't just sit on the bench. I mean, otherwise it makes us all look foolish.
You know, I always wonder about that stuff. I feel like if you're a coach coaching that way, you're doomed. You know, so I tend to be skeptical that that's it. You know, I think, I mean, look, Deion Lewis actually did have a couple nice plays in that game. I think he is your, you know, third down back. he's someone that it's nice if you can use him as a changeup here and there. And, well, I mean, gosh, halfway through last year, he was their number one back. You know, he was having a good year. But, yeah, I mean, I think at some point it's kind of like, I think when he put it on the floor, then it's on the grass in Carolina, it's like, you know what? It's just between that and between just what a weapon Derrick Henry is, it just doesn't make sense to give many, if any, opportunities from Lewis to, or from Henry to Lewis. And so it feels more like that was just like a revelation kind of weekend for them. Sort of like, you know what? It's just like, you got to go with this guy. It's desperation time. Remember last year, the only reason they were in position to be in the playoffs last year is because they just went all Derrick Henry at the end, and he responded. And I think that's got to be the formula the rest of the way.
Well, and rightfully so, honestly. I mean, I go back to, you know, Derrick Henry, and when he was given that opportunity at Alabama after Alabama lost for the second straight year early in the season against Ole Miss, it became the Derrick Henry show. And Bama did just fine with him carrying the ball and carrying the load in that situation. I did ask Derrick after the game on Sunday whether or not he wanted to get a couple more carries, and no, he said he was good. He was good on. He earned his check for the week. I'll just say that much. But look, here's the opportunity: 5-5. But once again, I go back to all the things that were being said. Why Mike Vrabel is head coach of the Titans? That they don't want to be good; they want to be great. They were pushing that in the off season. Well, 10 games in, they're 5-5. I don't know about you, but that's not great.
No, but it's a heck of a lot better than 2-4. And you know, you think of how close they were after they were 2-4 after that dreadful game at Denver to losing the next two home games, and they've won 3 of 4. They've got Tannehill has played better than Mariota was playing, and he has, you know, given them a chance to at least score some points. So certainly the good to great thing hasn't happened, but you know, like it's still on the table after 10 games at least, which. A few weeks ago, I would have said, forget about it. I would have expected right now to already be, you know, kind of garbage time, so to speak, you know, what's going to happen in the off season. So at least they've made it interesting. Obviously, they don't have much margin for error here, and they have a very tough schedule, which makes me doubtful that they're going to be able to get in the same position they did a year ago. But there's at least some hope with Tannehill playing how he's playing. If you can get some of those guys back on defense, you know, get above 500 against Jacksonville. And, you know, it does seem to be a thing with this franchise, you know, these late season runs to, you know, to kind of turn around a situation that looked grim.
I remember we had conversations when the Titans first acquired Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, and I was saying it then, he's better than Marcus Mariota. I mean, are you surprised that he's having the success? I will say this. I'm not surprised he's having success. I am surprised that for any quarterback, for that matter, I don't care if you're a future Hall of Famer Tom Brady, but every time you get into the red zone, you end up with a touchdown. That's pretty remarkable so far what Ryan Tannehill's been able to do.
Yeah, no, I'm surprised. And, you know, I mean, I didn't think so because based on 7 years of Tannehill, basically, you know, he and Mariota are very similar in overall performance. Tannehill a little looser with the ball, and that's actually been true too. Tannehill has been looser with the ball here, but he's been more decisive. He's throwing the ball with more zip, and, you know, the way he ran the ball against Kansas City too, that was one of those where I haven't seen a lot of that. Not like I watch every Dolphins game every year, but, you know, I didn't see a lot of Tannehill trucking people on, you know, 3rd and 10 and getting the first down. So he's obviously, you know, I think sometimes, you know, a player gets in a situation like Mariota is now where basically his team has said, okay, we're moving on, and then you get another chance, however it comes about. And, you know, sometimes I think that can be a powerful, you know, motivation. And he's been very good. So all credit to him. You know, we'll see if Mariota gets his chance somewhere after this. But I'd also still look at it and say it's 4 games. There are 7 years of evidence. So the 7 years would suggest that there's a regression at some point coming. Doesn't mean it has to happen, but, you know, I mean, you've got to keep that in mind. And now the question for me that's really interesting, Johnny, is, you know, how seriously are the Titans right now thinking about some kind of a, you know, 2-year deal or something like that to offer that's reasonable from their perspective, that's a nice pay boost for him, but that keeps him off the open market and at least gives you a, you know, a quarterback for some period of time while you presumably draft your next attempt at a franchise quarterback.
Well, for one thing, whatever you do is going to be cheaper than your combination of Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill for this year. And you're right. You can get Ryan Tannehill and draft as far as the 2020 draft and groom that next person whenever whoever that person is. We don't know how high they get. You don't want to wait around to the 6th or 7th round to select a quarterback. But no matter what that combination is, it's going to be cheaper than what they're paying right now.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, then the other question is, too, it's like, you know, how good do you think you can be next year, like with Tannehill, you know? I mean, or is it sort of mini rebuild, you know, mindset? You know, a lot of really interesting questions, but you're right. The bottom line is, you know, the 20.9 you're paying Mariota this year is off the books. And so if you can get Tannehill for, let's say, you know, 14-ish, something like that, you know, then you can draft a rookie, and then you've got a little more room for other stuff too. So there's a lot of contracts that are sort of up. John Glennon wrote today about the Derrick Henry dilemma, and what do you do with him? I mean, do you try to get him signed? I mean, to me, I think he's a pretty valuable guy.
You have to sign him. You have to sign him. But sometimes, though, when you ask about what is what are the folks at St. Thomas Sports Park thinking? Well, they thought Marcus Mariota could deliver this team to greatness. And I'm like, what has shown you in the past after the injury back in 2016 that was even possible?
Well, I think the playoff win at Kansas City was one thing. But no, it doesn't matter. We don't need to argue about Marcus anymore.
But it's important, though, when you evaluate. I mean, look, they're still messing up as far as evaluations. If they think Deion Lewis should get, you know, the same amount of carries as Derrick Henry through the first half of the season, and that he only gets 2 carries in the first half. Well, I'm sorry, 3. They call 1 back against Carolina in the first half against a poor run defense. So I'm not, like, throwing a lot of trust in the people and their opinions over there at St. Thomas Sports Park anyway with regards to how they evaluate personnel.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I mean, you know, Corey Davis goes 5th overall, and that has not – he has not been a 5th pick.
Have you looked, by the way, recently at the number and the type – forget about wide receivers, just some of the players that the Titans could have had on this roster right now if they decided to not go with Corey Davis?
Recently I have not, but I think the next year I look back and now you can play that game a lot, but yeah, I mean, that's a,
when you're picking 5th, when you're picking 5th, you can certainly play that game. And I mean, how nice would Patrick Mahomes look in a Titans uniform?
Oh, well, sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously a lot of teams are going to rue the, you know, not getting Mahomes and Watson in the same draft.
Yeah, either one. Take either one. And once again, sometimes you just, like, everybody tries to be the smartest person in the room, and only thing you do is outsmart yourself in those situations. All right, I was asked this week about Vanderbilt. And I was, okay, what's the scenarios? How does Derek Mason come back? I mean, the obvious, you know, beat Kentucky, East Tennessee State, beat Tennessee for the 4th straight year. But if those things don't happen, you know, to me, there's a bigger problem than just Derek Mason. And this is, one of these things where you can't just say he's coming back for 1 year because, you know, to me, there needs to be some adjustments as far as the assistant coaches. I don't know what the exact salaries are as far as the assistant coaches. I'm pretty sure that there's not a really strong investment in his coaching staff. That's my general assessment when you look at the inability, especially under Derek Mason, to coach up a lot of these players. But no one's going to come and take a job for 1 year. They're not going to uproot. I mean, would you uproot your family, Joe, from Michigan and come here just knowing it's just going to be a 1-year stint when you were in your capacity? No, and you're not going to get quality assistant coaches to do that either. So with that said, you're going to say, okay, Derek Mason's our coach. He's not just back for a year. We're fully behind this. We're investing into his staff. We're investing in the football program. We're going to make this work. But if you don't do that, then what's the point?
Yeah, and the tough part there too is now you're losing some really good players from a team that's probably going to finish 3-9, and then when you lose those, I mean, what does next year look like? You know, I mean, Riley Neal was a 1-year stopgap at quarterback. Kind of feels to me like Mo Hassan's done. You know, with this concussion and an awful hit in the Missouri game. You know, Deuce Wallace just has not been up to snuff. I mean, he's not a guy who I think you can feel, you know, is any kind of future at that position for you. So you have that, all these other questions. So if you have another year like this next year and you just go status quo, then, like, you know, it's a rough situation. But at the same time, then the big question I have too is, what is the cost of making the move now? No, it's not going to be cheap. He just signed an extension. I think you're right, the assistants, I think relative to other SEC staffs, you know, I would guess do not have salaries that match up, but still, you know, substantial salaries at this point, you know, in the SEC and college football. You're going to have a pretty substantial buyout. Don't know the number, you know, to pay Derek Mason. You had to pay to get rid of Bryce Drew early. So, you know, what kind of a factor is that? Just the, you know, we don't have the money to do this right now factor, you know? And then, of course, fans will say, well, if you bring him back, like, I'm not coming, and there's zero excitement. Now, my counter to that is, you're not coming now. You know, it's an interesting situation and not a good one and a really tough decision, I think, for Malcolm Turner. I don't think it's easy to just say, Derek Mason, you're gone. But I also, like you said, I mean, you know, if you're gonna fire some people on the staff, and Derek Mason has made it clear he doesn't want to, but if you're going to, like you said, who's excited to come, you know, try to help him with that roster next year? And how confident are they that no matter what kind of coaching up they do, you know, Vanderbilt's going to win enough games to turn things around? I can't imagine that a lot of really good coaches would be interested in that.
Let's turn our attention, before we let you go, over to Knoxville. It's the bye week, and then Tennessee, just like last year, Missouri, then Vanderbilt. Here you are, if you're Tennessee, after the 1-4 start, you find yourself with a record of 5-5, and this is what you're playing for. You beat Missouri, you beat Vanderbilt, and say Texas A&M finishes with the same record, knowing that A&M went to the Gator Bowl last year. Tennessee will get rewarded with a New Year's Day game in Jacksonville if you take care of business and win these last two. However, so you this is one of these tough things, because if you're Jeremy Pruitt, this is a measuring stick. You learned the lesson, or did you, from last year? Can the team finish strong under your leadership? And if they pay attention to you, are they listening to you? And just think about all the nice little building blocks moving forward to year three if all these things play out.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, I mean, the idea of them in the Gator Bowl, it's just crazy, but you're right. I mean, I think that's absolutely what they would get if they win these last two. And it would be pretty remarkable turnaround after September. Not, you know, the 0-2 start at Georgia State, you know, the blown game to go to you, but also just the dreadful performance against Florida, when at that point you're just like, there's just no hope for this team. And to see what they've become, pretty impressive. But I'm taking a little pause, because I thought this is what we were watching last year at 5-5. And I know Missouri and Vanderbilt last year are definitely better than Missouri and Vanderbilt this year.
Right.
But, you know, Tennessee still has to do it and follow through and finish this thing. I'll be really surprised if they don't. But I definitely did not see those last two blowouts last year. I didn't see that coming, you know, after the way they played against Kentucky. So a little bit of pause there. But, yeah, I mean, I really like a lot of what they're doing. And to me, I know Jared Garantano's been a heck of a reliever coming out of the bullpen, but I think I'm starting him from now on.
Well, I think you have to. And that'll be – I was throwing this out there. It's not like in basketball where you start your five and then about 3 or 4 minutes in, you bring in your sixth man. It's not like that. You know, possession, two possession, three, or whatever, how many you lose – by not having Jarrett Garantano out there, you don't get back in the fourth quarter and say, oh, can I have a do-over with what happened in the first quarter, early part of the second? And so I'm exactly – you got to put the best person in that position out there on the field that gives you the best opportunity to win these two games.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you probably have some wiggle room against Vanderbilt based on what we've seen from Vanderbilt. But, you know, at Missouri, Missouri still is a much better home team. Kelly Bryant getting healthy and all that stuff. I mean, I think to your point, like you want to be best foot forward from the start. And there was a pretty stark difference to me between Brian Maurer and Eric Garantano in performance and comfort and just, you know, kind of mastery out there at the line of scrimmage against Kentucky.
Well, and you actually saw that, although it failed and it was probably a bad decision at the time, but even the fact that he went rogue there on that fourth and goal situation at Alabama because he had confidence in his own ability to pull it off. I mean, it failed, but you have to admire somebody who actually believed enough in his own abilities to try it.
Well, I'd like you to put that out to a poll question to Vol Twitter right now.
Look, we all, now in hindsight, you know, look, it was a dumb decision. He gets yelled at. I get all of that. But at least you want somebody that has the deer in the headlight kind of look in their eyes? Or do you want somebody that's confident enough to actually do that? You know, and here's the thing, though. You learn from those mistakes. And that's the most important thing about it. Because if you show me a quarterback that's never made mistakes, I'll show you somebody that's not winning you a lot of games because they never really push themselves and push the limits.